Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:13 p.m. and it is Central Time, and today is March 24th. And I thought we'd kick off today with this rather interesting customized index that was created by somebody on Bloomberg. I don't exactly know who, but what it does is it tries to create an equal weighted index of all of the meme stocks over and their performance since December. So we can definitely see that there was a very impressive move from December through to the 1st of February. And since then, they haven't really done much of anything. So even though the meme grouping continues to get this outsized amount of attention, and we can see that there's a fair number of shares that are in here. So GameStop is in there, Bed Bath & Beyond. Then, of course, you've got General Motors, Nokia, and then and AMC. But then there are a couple of other ones that are biotechnology shares, Clovis being one of those. So what we are definitely seeing is that there's some differentiation going on. And there's also been a lot of speculation out there in the media about the impact of $1,400 that are currently going out to people all over the USA. I think that is much more going to flow to companies like Kering and to the luxury goods companies than it is to shares like GameStop, for example. Certainly, I've seen queues outside of the Gucci stores, Apple stores, in malls, both in Texas and in Los Angeles. Now, that is at least part because there are occupancy limits on the number of people who can be inside the store, so it perhaps makes it look more busy than it might otherwise be. And Kering has certainly paused here in the region of its peaks from over the course of the last year, but it's not at all, I think, beyond the bounds of possibility that they're going to surprise on the upside in terms of their earnings because of those additional stimulus checks that are going out. Apple is also likely to benefit. A lot of people will use that money to go off and buy a new $1,000 phone. But then we can see that the share is still in the region of the trend mean. So we're seeing a similar condition here, that the story would appear to be rather supportive, but the stock market and the meme stocks are not performing to the same extent. So there must be something else going on. And this, I think, is going to come all the way back to the bond yields, what's going on, and then also the determination of different central banks to approach the global economic recovery from their own unique perspectives. Because there is now an increasingly sharp differentiation between what the Federal Reserve is doing and what the People's Bank of China is doing and the Bank of Japan are doing, or indeed what the Europeans are doing. And it's probably worth considering each individually. So when we look at the 10-year government bond yield in the USA, it's certainly been trending higher. And we are starting to see at least some unwinding of that oversold condition. And so far, it's been modest, to say the least. And if this trend is going to remain consistent, and it has been rivetingly consistent since August, well, then we may perhaps be at the point where supply is going to start reasserting. So in order to really demonstrate that there is some short covering coming back into the market for government bond yields, then it will have to sustain a move below the 1.6% level. And of course, the point that I was most acutely trying to point out back in January was that rising yields would have a knock-on effect for the most highly levered portion of the market, and we've seen plenty of evidence of that. With bond yields now testing the point of consistency for their trends, then we're also seeing that a large number of risk assets are also testing their respective trend means, or they are starting to come back down towards those trend means. So when we look at, for example, the cloud computing sector, it's also still susceptible to additional consolidation. But again, the point is that with a number of these sectors, most particularly semiconductors and cloud computing, then they had a massive surge in demand for their products in 2020. Now, particularly with semiconductors, we're seeing plans being put in place where there are plans to spend tens of billions of dollars on additional manufacturing capacity, most recently from Intel, to supply the world with this anticipated continued demand growth. But it's unlikely that we're going to continue to see the pace of demand growth persisting. So we're going to have a supply response without necessarily the continued growth in demand. And that is likely to limit the continued advance. We saw a significant downward dynamic today on Intel. So they're going to spend $20 billion, and it is likely to translate into significant spending and potentially a hit to the balance sheet for the company, and not least because they've lost the pole position in terms of their competition with Taiwan Semiconductor. But Taiwan Semiconductor, that is the wrong share. Taiwan Semiconductor is also unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. And particularly with geopolitical tensions rising and a lack of water, and then of course increasing demand for semiconductors, there will be more competition coming through from the likes of Intel and other semiconductor manufacturers. And it's a very similar story with the cloud companies. Anyone who wanted to migrate to the cloud has probably already done so. Now, when we think about what all that means in terms of the bond yield, well, a lot of the growth is highly dependent on access to extremely low interest rates and abundant liquidity. And without that, there is obviously a question about what is the viability of those growth plans. Obviously, it's less of an issue for the highly capitalized companies, but particularly from the perspective of the cloud providers, then a large number of upstart companies, part of their business model is that they can exist on the cloud. I've certainly been, just from my own personal perspective and from the perspective of Fuller Tracy Money as a company, I've been looking at what it would cost to offshore or the back end for the chart library, or to deploy a cloud-based infrastructure. And the answer is that it would cost us more to offshore or to go outside and hire a company than all the data that we currently purchase from Bloomberg. So it would effectively double the cost of maintaining the chart library. But of course, we could then potentially grow it and market it to a wider audience. But of course, that's an uncertainty. And it's exactly the same kind of uncertainty that every other company comes up against as they look to outsource to the cloud, migrate onto Amazon Web Services and grow their businesses. So these are determinations that are very dependent on access to extremely low liquidity. And of course, young startups, they don't mind if they eventually go bust. But of course, I'm not willing to take that risk. I'm not willing to allow this service to disappear by taking another big financial risk. So those are the kinds of determinations that are driving these kinds of growth markets. And that's exactly why we're seeing this pressure coming to bear as interest rates rise. Well, Then, when we think about what's going on in China, well, they don't want to have a bubble. And they know that there is a clear risk that they already have one. So, the ChinaX index is now back below its trend mean. This is by far the largest pullback we've seen. And part of the reason for that, despite the fact that when we look at what the constituents of the index are, they're smaller companies generally, although CATL is not a small company by any stretch of the imagination, since they are the largest of the battery companies and battery manufacturing companies internationally. But if you just simply go beyond that one, well, then you've got biotechnology. And you've got another biotechnology company, energy companies, foodstuffs. So there's a lot of different types of companies, and they're all in this index because they're anticipated to grow quickly. But unfortunately, from the perspective of investors, when we look at the performance of Tencent, which has been nothing short of spectacular over the course of the last decade, the question, of course, is how much more it will be allowed to grow. Because the communist administration have put a lid on how much they're willing to allow these companies to grow because they represent a threat to single party rule. So the primary reason that these companies are being curtailed is because the administration there puts social or I guess social harmony at the center of their policy because it helps to ensure single party rule. And they don't want to have a bubble in the stock market, they don't want to have a bubble in the property market, but they don't want prices to fall aggressively either. So we've already started to see that some evidence of support building has been coming through in the CSI 300 because they've instructed the sovereign wealth funds to start buying. So that has arrested the pace of the decline. But what we are now starting to see is that the renminbi is starting to weaken. As investors begin to ask the question, well, if China is not going to allow its companies to grow and expand in the same way that they've been allowed to grow, that US companies have been allowed to grow and expand, well, why are we investing there? So, as weakness comes through in the stock market, then that is likely to translate into money getting pulled out of China. And this is clearly what we're starting to see again, that investors are much more willing today to move money around in size. So there was a significant migration of cash into China because it was deemed to be the winner from the coronavirus. And now the question is whether it is still the winner from the coronavirus, because it was one of the top growth companies last year. And now they don't want their companies to grow in the same fashion. That obviously it raises a big question for investors. And then, of course, in terms of vaccinations, China has a massive population, and they are imposing all sorts of ridiculous or onerous regulations on people. Depending on which country you want to come from to visit China, you may have to submit to an anal swab. You may have to decide, or you may have to have access to one of the Chinese vaccines rather than an international vaccine. Or you may need a travel passport. But if you're coming from South Korea, then if you're simply coming in and leaving within a week, you don't need a you don't need even need a visa anymore. So there are these really quite differing sets of regulations depending on which country people are coming from. So all of that is not confidence inducing. So the renminbi and its pace of advance has certainly lost consistency, and there is potential that it is going to continue to ease from here. And then we have the yen. And it's now right in the region of its of the dollar sequence of lower rally highs. So now the question is whether we're going to see continued easing of demand for the yen. It's been pausing for the last 3 weeks, and the Bank of Japan has decided that they are going to ease their limitations on yield curve control. So nonetheless, bond yields have started to come back down and they are back below the 10 basis point level. So now the question is whether the bond yield is going to ease back below 5 basis points or the trend mean. But then they've also decided that they are going to stop buying TOPIX ETFs. So we are at a stage with Japan that it is susceptible to additional weakness as investors adapt to the removal of support from the central bank, both from the bond market and the stock market. That opens up the potential that we're going to come back down towards the region of the trend mean for the Nikkei. And certainly, I think the most important point for the Nikkei is the trend mean in the short term, but the 20,000 level over the medium term. I think it's unlikely we're ever going to see the Nikkei trade back below 20,000, but it could easily pull back to the region of the trend mean. That will likely raise the question of whether the Bank of Japan has been too eager to withdraw its assistance, or are they correct in surmising that we are back in more of an inflationary environment. But the near-term, I think, point is that Japan is beginning to remove some of its accommodation. China is unwilling to continue to increase its accommodation. That is likely to have a knock-on effect in terms of confidence. And where we're seeing increasing confidence is in Wall Street. So certainly the more over-levered portions of the market, particularly in the technology sector, remain in a corrective phase. So this correction overall has been more about rotation than it has been about the absolute level of correction, because the S&P 500 remains really very steady. And investors are willing to bet that the continued willingness of the Fed to support the economic expansion is what is required at the current time. And that's putting upward pressure on the dollar. So it's not simply that we're seeing weakness in the yen and the renminbi, but the dollar has also been steady, and most particularly because Europe is still laboring under its approach to the coronavirus. Now, Angela Merkel apologized for imposing this onerous lockdown over the Easter break and decided that they were not going to go ahead with it in here today. So that was a significant flip-flop. And the euro is now back below the trend mean because Europe has singularly failed to gain access to the most promising of the vaccines. And they have also had this question about the willingness to continue to support the economic expansion. So Europe is at a crossroads. They are most likely to have to continue to engage in fiscal stimulus. That appears to be quite likely. But of course, we have this big election coming up in Germany in a few months' time, and Angela Merkel will be gone. And the Greens look like they are going to make significant strides in terms of their representation. And that represents an additional uncertainty for Europe, although perhaps quite beneficial for the renewable energy sector. But Europe is at this point not quite in the same category as tightening that we have from China. But it's not in the same category as the USA either in terms of easing. So there is potential for the euro to give up some of its gains in the short term. And right now, investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the USA because they are more willing to pioneer growth, priorities rather than fiscal responsibility. And that potential for asset price inflation is certainly something that is helping to increase confidence, and not least because higher yields overall are attractive to foreign investors, particularly in an environment where we still have negative interest rates and negative yields across a broad swathe of Europe. Then when we think about, well, the outlook for the economic recovery globally is still very much tied to demand for renewable energy and to electric vehicles. It seems to be the clear bet that the majority are making, and that has translated into really quite an impressive advance for copper. It is still unwinding this overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and it's in a ranging phase overall, and we might yet see some additional consolidation, but I think by far the most important point is that the entire price structure has been ranging for 13 years. We are right in the region of the peak from back in 2008, so it's not at all beyond, or I guess surprising, that we may see a lengthier period of consolidation. But subsequent to that, we would think it's quite likely we're going to see additional upside. We're already seeing that countries are scrambling to increase their royalties. They want to get a bigger piece of the pie during the unfolding bull market. What that also suggests is that there will be rising costs of production in order to pay those royalties. But the medium-term outlook is that there will be less resistance in some of these countries to stop expansion of mining activities because of the significant contribution that those activities are making to GDP growth. So it's positive for the mining sector over the medium term, perhaps not so impressive in the short term. And that's why the copper miners sector is pulling back. And it continues to unwind this short-term overbought condition. When we then think about the outlook for the renewable energy sector, well, they are very much more interest rate dependent than they are, I think, influenced by the demand for additional infrastructure. And that's, I think, quite clear in terms of the biggest constituents in these ETFs. Particularly when we think about companies like Sunrun, where they make up very significant portions of the ETF, and they are, their entire business model is influenced by low interest rates. So that does represent a significant source of angst from the perspective of investors. And then it's a similar condition for a number of the wind companies, although they have now unwound the majority of the overextension relative to the trend mean. But we're at the rather important area here, where if the bull market is going to remain intact, then this is an area where we should anticipate some support starting to come in. And the very large companies like Amazon and Nvidia are right in the region of their respective trend means, and so far holding on. But we do need to see more. We need to see them clearly pushing back up and above those trend means. And so far, Amazon has been making heavy weather of it. Microsoft has certainly held up better, and so has Google. Of course, Google is very well placed to continue to benefit because they are less dependent, or they're less levered than companies like Amazon, and they've invested more in what are potentially the big growth potential stories of the next decade, like autonomous vehicles and quantum computers. So nonetheless, it still has this overbought condition relative to the trend mean. When we think about where are we in terms of this overall cycle, I think a lot of interest is still in the biotechnology sector, but it did pull back rather sharply yesterday towards the close, and it is in additional negative territory in here today. The reality is we're continuing to see the rollout of vaccines, although there is obviously this question about the validity of the results from AstraZeneca, and then they are going to have to go back and reconfirm them. So that share, which had been showing early promise, has been pulling back, although it still has the succession of higher major reaction lows. When we look at the biotechnology sector overall, well, we've certainly seen that there has been this unwinding of the overbought condition. Then we've seen this pullback over the last couple of days, and you can see that there has been a lot of variability in terms of the performance, and the majority of shares are down in here today. That's not all to do with the success or otherwise of vaccines. Editas has been one of the leading advancers, and it was one of the primary meme stocks. Then it gave it all back up. And one thing that has plagued the CRISPR sector over the course of the last few years is exactly who owns the intellectual property. And this question has been circulating between CRISPR Therapeutics, Editas, and Intellia for years, and I don't think it's anywhere close to being resolved just yet. That suggests that this is a sector or a portion of the biotech market that will continue to experience volatility. But the bigger picture is that it has been the pandemic has been a massive use case and commercial use case for CRISPR technology and for gene editing generally, and most particularly for the provision of gene solutions. And that's something that will persist, and I think it's a point of the market that will continue to represent growth opportunity as we look towards what the future is. So I think we're still in a rotational correction overall, and as long as interest rates are and bond yields are still trending higher, and they are still trending higher, well then that is likely to represent a challenge. I'm upset with how I've played the Nasdaq over the course of the last week. I didn't get in at a particularly favorable point. I was shaken out of it, and now we've seen the price started to come back down again. We're not getting dynamic moves, so I'm rather at a point of indecision whether I should just jump back in and try and short it again and look at the potential that it could easily pull back by another 1,000 points, or whether I should just simply wait for some of that to take place and buy it and give up on trying to be too nimble. I am rather risk averse at present, and that I think perhaps is part of my I think psychology because of where I am in terms of my personal finances and looking at buying a house at present. So I don't want to take big risks in the short term. But I do think that if I'm willing to wait it out, there will be nice trading opportunities because there's an increasingly large number of sectors that are coming back into buying ranges. And I think there'll probably be more buying opportunities in the not too distant future than we've had recently. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.